Managing IIS6 servers in an enterprise environment. Hello, and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on managing IIS6 servers in an enterprise environment. Today, we will discuss the key strategies in deploying, backing up, and restoring your websites and web applications. Let us start this session by going into more detail on exactly what we will be covering. First, we'll extensively cover issues that you typically encounter when you deploy applications in an enterprise environment. We'll also discuss the plans and strategies you can use to make deployment as easy as possible. We'll also go through a demonstration that covers how to set up one-click deployments across an enterprise. Second, we'll talk about some strategies and techniques you can use to manage your websites and applications after you have deployed them on your enterprise IIS servers. We'll go over the importance of getting to know how your applications work, including establishing baseline statistics for its behavior. We'll also discuss enterprise-level tracing as a way to understand what components are called when a particular type of request comes into your application. We'll include a demonstration on how to enable several IIS features that are included in Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1. Third, we will review common problems that arise with your web applications and the steps you should take when they occur. These include application crashes and hangs, as well as memory leaks. We include demonstrations on how to view currently executing requests, as well as determining if permissions failures are occurring in your application. Fourth, we'll discuss how to protect your servers, sites, and applications in case of a disaster. This is more than backing up to an independent device. This concerns having a plan for recovering from a catastrophic failure and practicing the steps of your plan repeatedly. Throughout our session today, we will keep the focus on the tools you need to deploy, manage, backup, and restore web applications on IIS in an enterprise environment. These tools will make your job a lot easier, but don't replace planning deployments and practicing disaster recovery steps. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Here's a brief overview of what would be helpful, but not essential, for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or other versions of Microsoft products we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed out the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. It would be helpful to have administrative experience with Microsoft Windows Server 2003 and Internet Information Services 6. A familiarity with at least a portion of the toolset available to deploy, manage, and troubleshoot sites and applications on IIS would be useful as well. To cover the topics mentioned earlier and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda. We'll start today by talking about the complexities you run into when you deploy applications to IIS servers in an enterprise environment. We'll discuss the tools you should use to accomplish the task, the IIS server requirements, and detail how making deployment templates can help you through the process. Then we'll move into a discussion of managing IIS6 and your web applications across your enterprise. In this stage of managing, it is important to know how the application you have deployed works. We'll review a couple of techniques you can use to learn about your applications, as well as the tools you can use to do that. Next, we'll cover how to prepare yourself for the inevitable problems that arise with your deployed applications. What should you do when an application pull fails abruptly, or when server-wide performance degrades slowly over time? We will tell you the tools you should use to troubleshoot these kinds of issues, and the steps you should take to prepare yourself before they happen. Last, we'll go into why you should have a plan for disaster recovery. Every IT pro should have such a plan for the systems they administer, and IIS6 server administrators are no different. We'll discuss the tools you should use to back up your IIS servers, including web content and configuration, and techniques you should use to recover that information after a disaster occurs. We will also emphasise the importance of practising your disaster recovery plans. Before we get started with the main presentation, we'll let you know where you can get the tools that we'll be discussing in today's presentation. Before you can run the tools we discuss in today's presentation, you need to know where you can get them. A number of them are Windows Server 2003 operating system tools, and they are available to you on the operating system CD. You need to make sure their location is in your path environment variable, or that you copy them to directories where you want to use them. This allows your scripts to work. There are also the tools that are IIS6 specific that are included on the operating system CD. A lot of these tools reside in the inetpub admin scripts directory, so you can use the tools from there. You can find others in the Windows System 32 directory. There are also IIS6 resource kit tools. If you perform an internet search, you'll be able to find these tools quite quickly. Finally, there are the IIS6 Diagnostics Toolkit tools, which you can download from www.iisdiagnostics.com. You can go to this site and download these tools quickly. One of the frustrations many IT pros run into is how can they get these tools onto their production servers. In an enterprise environment, that is something that you need to plan for with your build team. If you don't have these tools deployed across the enterprise, then you'll be at a distinct disadvantage when it comes to problem solving some of the issues we're going to talk about today. Now we'll return to our agenda and dive into the first main topic of our session today, deploying websites and applications on IIS6. There are a number of complexities you will run into when you deploy applications to IIS servers in an enterprise environment. You can handle these deployment tasks most readily by creating automated scripts that allow you to perform tasks repeatedly in the exact same way across multiple servers. Let's proceed with detailing the difficulties involved in web application deployment. There are a couple of major reasons why XCopy deployment is difficult. The first reason is because the IIS metabase.xml file, which stores configuration information for the server, is stored in the INET info process. Each worker process, the w3wp.exe program, must refer back to the metabase for authentication information, log location information, and other configuration information. None of the worker processes have a copy of the configuration available in their own process. Secondly, XCopy deployment is difficult because the metabase has machine-specific information stored in it. These include directories and drives that don't make any sense when you take the file and move it from one computer to another. There's also sensitive security information stored in the metabase that uses the local computer's machine key. Our task is to get the configuration that we have on the first computer to look the same on other computers. This is particularly important if you are setting up a web farm. Another difficulty we encounter in a web farm or enterprise environment is that when one server has a configuration that is slightly different from the others, it's hard to ascertain that. For example, if you have 8 servers in your web farm and only one of them has a slightly different configuration, how do we go through and find those differences? Moving content from server to server is another difficulty. Application Center 2000 is one solution, but that has its own set of complexities. You can, however, work around the complications in IIS6 to deploy applications and sites yourself using the tools provided by Microsoft. We will show you how to do that. Let's talk now about how you solve these deployment complexities. Three things can help you solve your IIS deployment issues. The first is, you should know which tools you need to use to get the job done. That's our task today, to let you know what tools are available for you to deploy your websites and applications. The second is, you need to understand the IIS6 requirements for your servers. The third is, you need to model your deployments. In other words, you need to make a dry run of every deployment. This means that you essentially create a template for each deployment. You plan every tool that a particular deployment is going to use, how each deployment will meet the IIS requirements, and what directories you need to create, and what virtual directories you need to create. You can do this using Microsoft Windows Management Instrumentation, or Active Directory Service Interfaces scripts, or by using tools that we outlined today. The important thing is that you plan and prepare for your deployments and make sure you know what you need for each one. We'll move now into what tools you should use to deploy your websites and applications onto IIS servers. The first tools that you should know about are the tools that actually copy content files from one location to another. You can choose between XCopy and RoboCopy. You can choose whichever one of these you think will work better on your environment. XCopy is provided on Windows Server 2003, while RoboCopy is available on the IIS 6 resource kit. You can also perform an internet search and download RoboCopy if you want. iisconfig.vbs, adsutil.vbs, and iisext.vbs are all available in the Windows System 32 directory for IIS. We'll discuss when to use each of these in just a few minutes. Finally, if you're deploying a site or application that uses Secure Sockets Layer, you'll want to use iisCertDeploy.vbs. This is a step that many IT pros forget about when they deploy their applications. You must remember to move your SSL certificates from your staging servers to your production servers, or your users will have problems accessing your site. You want to make sure you understand how to use iisCertDeploy to move these certificates from your development servers to your staging servers and on into your production environment. This tool is available on the IIS 6 resource kit as well. Let's go into more depth on XCopy and RoboCopy now. XCopy and RoboCopy copy content from one server to another. It's as simple as that. You use the commands to send content to another server or to get content from another server. Why do you want to use these tools? First of all, they've been around a long time and are well tried and tested. Also, you can use them to perform backups for your applications. They can be more helpful than the NT backup tool. The backup tool copies files into a flat directory structure, which can make it difficult to find the applications you've backed up. Use XCopy or RoboCopy for backups, and you can maintain the file structure for your application, which can make it easier to locate when you need it. We'll show in one of our demos later how to back up to a UNC share and how that can really make your life easier. These can be difficult when you are deploying to a web farm because of the number of servers involved. Using these copying tools, you need to connect to every server in the web farms and set up the site infrastructure, which can be tedious and time-consuming, particularly if you have a large web farm. But you can copy content to a UNC share and distribute it from there to your web farm servers. We'll talk a bit more about that later. Another thing to note here is that you cannot use XCopy or RoboCopy to deploy configuration. This is because the metabase.xml file resides in the inet info process, and these tools can't copy that. This is simply for content copying across servers. The best scenario is to copy your application content to a central location, then connect from each server in your web farm and use the same tools to copy the content down to each one. Now we'll compare this to how IIS 6 processes incoming requests. iisconfig.vbs is another tool that's been around for several versions of IIS. You can use it both locally and remotely. Since you can use it remotely, you can go to the development or staging servers and get the configuration information and copy it to a central location. You can then copy this out to your production servers from this central location. Let's consider a couple of things. First, no staging servers are identical, nor are production servers identical to staging servers. The differences we encounter between computers include the IIS metabase settings. The metabase on each server contains computer-specific information. each server has a different IP address. This is particularly pertinent to web farms because binding will be different between computers based on IP addresses. Also, custom error path locations are hard-coded into the IIS metabase, as are log file directory paths. Additionally, the anonymous machine account is made from the computer name, so that will be different for each computer. These are just a few examples. To get around these differences, we suggest you take a two-step approach when you deploy your applications. Step 1 is to create your websites across all the servers. You can do this with a tool like iisweb.vbs. At this point, you should also copy all of the content from a centralized location to your web servers. Remember, when you create a website and name it, IIS6 automatically generates a hashed site ID based on the name. If you use a batch file to create the site across multiple servers, they all receive the same name, and IIS on each computer generates the same hashed identifier for the site on each computer. After you've created the sites and copied the content, you should use iisconfig.vbs to configure your applications within that site. iisconfig.vbs allows you to copy only portions of the IIS metabase, so you can choose the pertinent configuration settings and copy them over, without having to worry about copying machine-specific information from one server to another. You should use two batch files to perform these steps. Use one to create the sites, and the second to copy the application configuration to the appropriate locations on the servers where you host the application. We'll go into more detail on how to do this in just a few minutes when we perform our first demonstration. Now we'll move on to adsutil.vbs. After you've deployed your applications across your web servers and you find that you need to make some configuration changes across all of your servers, you'll want to use adsutil.vbs. This file is stored in the c:\inetpub/admin scripts directory on any server computer with IIS installed. Since it doesn't reside in the Windows System 32 directory, the first step you need to take before you use it is to add it to your path environment variable. As you probably know, this will allow you to use it from any directory on your server. Let's go into more depth on xcopy and robocopy now. Since we don't typically just host static content, things like ISAPIs, CGIs, PHPs and so on, IIS provides the iisext.vbs file to enable dynamic content on your web server. It adds a web service extension to your IIS server instance and allows that to work on your server. One thing to note, all of this functionality is available in the user interface, but in an enterprise environment, you really can't afford to use the user interface. It just doesn't scale. These tools provide you with a lot more flexibility and the capacity to automate these tasks across servers, which can make your life a lot easier. ISAPIs, which are typically DLL files, and CGIs, which are typically EXE or CGI files, don't require you to register them using Reg Server32. They do both require paths for deployment and application permissions. One big issue you should keep in mind is that for security reasons, you should only enable one extension at a time. Also, if practicable, only enable them on a per application basis. Particularly, don't enable the allow all unknown CGI or ISAPI extensions. Why? Because this allows any rogue CGI or ISAPI files to be imported onto your server and run. It isn't a good security practice. What you should do on your production server if you're running into problems is solve why an ISAPI or CGI is not getting enabled on a case-by-case basis. It will cause you much less pain in the long run. Let's go into more depth on xcopy and robocopy now. The next area you want to think about is how to deploy your secure sockets layer certificates to your production servers. Many IT pros forget about this step, and it is vital. It's also important that your applications have been tested with SSL certificates. Frequently, we deploy applications that haven't been tested using SSL and then are surprised when the application doesn't perform the way we expected it. So make sure that the application is tested and that you remember to deploy its certificates. Another thing to keep in mind is that most SSL sites are bound to a single IP port, and this can affect how your application behaves. You can also use SSL host headers to generate one certificate to use across multiple sites. There's a presentation on that if you want more details, but we'll give you the URL for that later in today's presentation. But at its base, you should know that SSL does have some overhead, and this is one element of that, which is one reason why you need to test it before deployment. If you don't, you're ignoring the end user's experience of your site. How do you deploy those certificates? With the IIS Search Deploy tool. You can use the -e command to export the certificates. You can export to a file, so after you export your certificate to the central location, you can move to the target server and use IIS Search Deploy to import this file. The -i command here defines our metabase path, and if you password protect the exported file, you'll use the -p command to define the password. The commands for doing this into a web farm are slightly different and are available if you use the help for IIS Search Deploy. We'll move now to our discussion of IIS 6 manageability. In this demonstration, we'll show you how to use automated scripts to simplify your deployment tasks across your enterprise. We'll also discuss the tools you commonly use to perform these deployment tasks. Let's review the batch file we use to deploy our application to IIS. We go to our demo files directory and open deploy.bat with Notepad. Here at the beginning of the batch file is a netuse command that establishes a network drive, S. The command maps drive S to a web deploy directory on a computer named FileServer. This is the central location from which to deploy the website's content, configuration settings, and certificates. We mentioned the idea of such a centralized location earlier. Because we don't have access to a network share today, we've remarked this command out. After the pause, we use the IIS web utility to stop the default website, w3svc/1. We use this tool again to create our new site on the server, define its physical root directory, name it demo site, and add it to an application pool named demo site as well. The third step is to use xcopy to copy the content from the c:source directory. The source directory is what we're using to replace the network share we mentioned earlier. We use the *.* syntax to copy all files and folders from the source to the web share directory, our download directory for this operation. Then we use xcopy again to copy only content files from web share content demo site to the physical root of our website, c:add27demo1. Then we use the iiscnfg.vbs command to import our site's configuration from the demo site's XML file that contains the settings. The SP switch defines the source metabase level, and DP defines the destination metabase level. Both indicate that iiscnfg should copy this to the metabase root location for our site, LMW3SVC14499842 root. The IIS search deploy-c command deploys the certificate for the site from the WebShare SSL directory to the location for our demo site, W3SVC14499842 79. We've remarked this out because we don't have a valid certificate for our session today, but this shows you the command to use and the format of it. The last step would release the network share using the netuse-delete command. If we had established a connection at the start of this file, we'd need to close it here. Since we don't have a network share, we've commented this step out as well. Let's run the batch file and find out if everything works. First, there are the remarks about creating the network share, and after we press enter, IIS stops the default website and creates our new website. IIS assigns the new site to the demo site application pool, and its status is started. Next, we copy the content, configuration file, and certificates from our source share to the local share. Then, the batch file copies the content files only to the physical root directory for our website. The last step is for the batch file to upload the configuration for the site to the metabase. Now you see why these two steps need to be distinct. The next step is for the batch file to upload our certificate to the site, but as we mentioned, we commented this out. The final step is to close the connection to the network share. This is a simple site, so most of your deployment files will be more complex than this one, but this should give you a sense for how you can use these tools to deploy content, configuration, and SSL certificates. Let's open IIS Manager and check that everything is working. When we expand the websites, we find our site here, so we'll continue in and browse to a page in the site. Internet Explorer displays the page, so our deployment has been a success. Remember that in an enterprise environment, you will want to use a batch file on each IIS server to deploy your sites and applications from your central store. Let's move to our discussion of managing your websites and servers after deployment. After you have deployed your applications to your web servers, your next concern is how to manage them on the servers. How do you know what is healthy behaviour for an application? What are the times of day at which our application receives the most requests? And what tools should you use to gather this information? This section of our presentation dives into these questions. We'll begin with a look at the tools available to you for managing your websites and applications on IIS 6. First of all, there are a couple of tools available in Windows that you can use to manage your websites and applications on production servers. The first is the Performance Monitor, of course, and you can use this to establish baseline performance patterns and follow the amount of requests that are being processed over a given amount of time. There's also a tracing tool that is available in Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1. It is a command line tool that allows you to review the details of how IIS is processing requests as they arrive. It's an important tool, and we'll discuss it in detail in a few minutes. There is also Microsoft Operations Manager 2005, a great tool that lets you set alerts when certain conditions arise on your web server. We don't have time to cover it today, but the IT ProAd 25 TechNet webcast is dedicated to MOM from a web administrator's perspective. It's titled Everything a Web Administrator Needs to Know About MOM, and it is available on the TechNet website along with the current session. Finally, there is LogParser 2.2. This tool allows you to gather information from several different types of log files and analyze the information in them. There are a couple of great things about this tool. First, it is one of the few tools out that allows you to analyze your log information without having to create a custom solution to do it. Also, it allows you to use templates to display the information in the format you want. LogParser can even display log information graphically. Now let's move into a discussion of gathering baseline information about your applications. What we mean by baselining an application is to understand how end users use the website or application. To do that, you can use the Service Pack 1 tracing tool to step through what components are called when a request arrives. You don't necessarily just want to know the total time that it takes to process a request, though that is helpful. You want to know if there's any place within the request that is taking longer than they should. so you should have a sense of what your end user's experience is and also have a good idea what the application or site calls to process a request. Tracing allows you to go through a request step by step and see what other components and web services a particular request invokes. You can also baseline a website to determine which URLs on it are the most requested, or find out the hour during the day in which your website or application is busiest. These are some of the tasks that you can perform with Log Parser. There are a number of performance monitor counters that you should pay attention to when you baseline a site or application. There are six key performance monitor objects that you should check when establishing a baseline for your sites and applications. They are processor, process, memory, threads, web service, and web service cache. There are also three other objects that you can keep track of optionally. The first is the IIS global counter. The others you should definitely monitor if you're using the functionality that they track: active server pages and ASP.NET. There are a number of counters associated with ASP.NET, so you should dig through the performance counters for that yourself to see which ones you think are applicable to the sites and applications you are hosting. The key here is to turn these counters on and gather information with them. Don't worry about filtering before gathering the information, just go ahead and get all the information you can and filter later if you find that you need to winnow out some of the information you have gathered. Another good tool for baselining is Log Parser. Log Parser lets you gather information from a variety of logs stored on your servers. You can query the Event Viewer, Network Monitor, Performance Logs, and the daily IIS log files, to name just a few. The great thing about Log Parser is you can have it go over a log file and have it group the data that you're interested in together. It can tell you which URL is receiving the most hits on a particular day. If you see that pattern established, then when you notice a sudden change in which URL is receiving a lot of hits, you can see if there's a potential problem with the URL. You can also determine what time of day you're getting the most traffic to your site. Again, if this pattern changes, you'll be able to troubleshoot based on that change. This information can also be useful to let you better time any updates to your site or upgrades to your system so as to impact the fewest number of incoming requests. This is a great tool, and you should add it to your toolkit if you haven't already. With that, let's go ahead and discuss why you should make sure you're running Service Pack 1 on your servers. This demonstration will show you how you can use Log Parser to gather baseline information about your websites and applications. This can help you learn about your applications and allow you to notice when behavior changes so that you can investigate whether problems are occurring. Log Parser works with queries, and we're going to be using queries against IIS W3C log files to generate baseline information today. We have a query here that we can use to determine this, named HitSpreadSQL. This query sends information from all log files and puts it into a chart. First, we select the date timestamp from the log files. The query converts it to local time, and then takes just the hour component and converts that to a string. It then does a count over all the hours and tells us how many hits we have received. We run it against all of our log files, put the output into a GIF file, and then we group it by hours. Before we run this example, let's review the chart type attribute in our command prompt help. The first parameter is the chart type parameter, which allows you to define the type of chart you want. There are many options here, but if you have the Microsoft Office 2003 Web Components add-in installed, you can use its help to read about the different types of charts you can use. The chart type we are going to use for this demo is radar line filled. This is an optional parameter for our chart type attribute. Let's run our query. Since our VPC image has not been a live server, we don't have enough data to make a good representative graph here, so we'll review a GIF file generated from a live website that gets plenty of traffic. The image shows us the time distribution of the hit volume in our radar graph. Midnight is at the top of the graph, noon at the bottom, and each ring in the circle represents 10,000 hits. The highest usage here ranges from 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon, but there is still a significant number of incoming hits between 4 and 5 a.m. until after 1 a.m. If this was your website and you wanted to take it offline for maintenance or an update, the best time appears to be around 3 in the morning. Let's also determine the status code breakdown on our site. This example arises out of questions we have received about tools that can break down the different status codes their websites are sending out. We want to know the percentage of our pages for which the server sends a success status code, and what percentage returns 404 and other non-successful status codes. This query can help us determine that. This query selects the status of every request and then does a count. So we will have a number of how many times our site generates a 404 status and how many times it generates a 200. It then puts the data into a GIF file based chart. Last, we order and group the data by status code. We'll run our query, and again we're going to use a GIF image from a live site to demonstrate something real that you might find on your servers. LogParser has broken the requests coming into the different status codes that your server has sent in response to incoming requests. We've displayed the data in the exploded pie chart. What we have here on the right are all of our 200 status codes. Success. So our server responds with success to just a little more than half of the incoming requests to our server. The other major status code it responds with is 401, which is on the left of our chart here. This is the unauthorized status code, which means that the user does not have permissions to view a page or has submitted the wrong credentials to view the page, which typically does not reflect a problem with your server. The total between successful and unauthorized requests appears to be between 90 and 95% of incoming requests. So really, we aren't running into huge problems here. There is a smattering of 404s, file not found, status codes, and a few others. But the site represented by this graph is running as well as you could hope for, according to this graph. You could use this information to establish a baseline of an acceptable number of 404 errors. If the number of 404s climbed for an unknown reason, you could begin troubleshooting potential problems. Let's discuss the benefits of installing Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1. From an IIS perspective, you should install Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1 because Microsoft added a number of features that will be useful to you. You can now audit changes to the metabase, which makes it easier to find out if one of your web servers in a farm has changed slightly. Also, you can now compress static HTML files on your server to increase performance and bandwidth capabilities on your servers. Microsoft included new fields in the IIS log files, and they also centralized W3C logging. The latter allows you to configure your server so that all sites running on the server store their log data to a single file on the server. They store the data in W3C extended log file format, so the log can be read in a text editor. This is a server-wide configuration setting, so you can't set it for a particular site, only for the entire server. The biggest new feature, though, is enterprise-level tracing. We mentioned it earlier, but tracing allows you to follow each request that comes into your server from inception through completion. It lets you know what ISAPI DLLs the request calls, what CGI files the request calls, and any other features that are involved in satisfying the request. This allows you to see what is going wrong when request processing flounders. You'll be able to tell when the ISAPI DLL is not responding, or when some business logic that involves a database call is hanging. This will let you find problems on your server as they occur. Let's go into detail now on how enterprise level tracing works. So how does enterprise tracing work? First of all, you enter a command similar to the one we've marked with number 1. Logman start iistrace-pf myprovs.txtets. We use the -pf to specify we're using a file to connect the trace tool to multiple providers. If you only use a -p, you can only use a single provider. But here we have defined a file with multiple providers for our trace information. After you issue the command, it goes into an iistrace session. The session notifies the W3WP worker process that tracing is enabled. The process then tracks the processing of incoming requests. The next step is that the worker process starts. When a request comes in, it first goes through the iistrace session, and the session notes what time the request started and logs that data. The trace session then attaches itself to the request and goes inside the worker process as it executes the code. Each time a method call is made, the trace session logs that along with the result of the call. Every time a COM object is invoked, the trace session logs that along with the results. Every task that is performed in the worker process is logged to the trace session. Now, there is some performance overhead related to trace logging, but it is minimal because all of this logging is happening in the kernel. You don't want to log everything on a production server because it will degrade performance, but you can choose a level of tracing that is appropriate for your applications. When you want to stop tracing, you use the logman stop iistrace command. Use the -ets flag to tell the trace tool to stop immediately. After you stop tracing, the trace session loads the information it has gathered into an ETL file. You can use a tool like LogParser to read the data and format it for you so that it's easily readable. The data in the ETL file is organized by the request ID. Let's talk a bit about why you want to use enterprise level tracing for your websites and applications. Now, the primary use of enterprise level tracing is for diagnostic purposes, so that you can figure out why your application is not working correctly or not performing well. You'd also use it to profile your application. This is a means to find out what DLLs, scripts, and images, along with anything else that the application is loading, and when the application loads them. You can use it to figure out why the application is failing to access a particular file and a 401.3 error is being returned instead. The great thing about tracing is that it steps through every stage of request processing for each request. It steps through reading the metabase, any authentication and authorization sequences, any caching that the application does, along with all ISAPI filters involved. Now, if the request is successful, tracing will let you know that as well, but there really isn't any better way to get a full sense of what your application actually does than to trace through it. Let's talk about some tips you should keep in mind when you're managing your production servers. Here are some additional points you should think about in regards to your applications. You want to improve performance as much as you can, so you should consider using compression where it is appropriate. You should also review or create strategies associated with your application pools. Should you use time-based recycling, request-based recycling, or memory-based recycling, and when should you use each one? That is a question that only you can answer. This is where getting to know how the applications on your servers actually work will come in very handy. Additionally, you should turn off application pool recycling for configuration changes. This will help you avoid server downtime. Let's move to our second demonstration of this session and show you how to enable some of the features that we mentioned just a bit ago. Our next demonstration will show you how to enable a number of features available to you in Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1. We'll start out by enabling metabase auditing. This allows us to capture all changes to the metabase, and identifies who or what made the changes. The first step is to edit the audit policy for our server. We're running a domain controller, so we go to the domain controller security policy tool in administrative tools. When we get to the audit object properties, check the success and the failure option. This allows us to find out not only when someone has successfully changed the metabase, but also when someone has tried to change the metabase and failed. Next, we go to the command line and look up the help for the IISCNFG tool. The enable audit switch is the one we want, so let's review the help for that as well. We can enable auditing for any metabase path we choose. We could enable it for a website or the entire W3 SVC service, but we're going to use the entire metabase. We'll also use the recursive switch so that all child paths from the metabase route will be audited as well. We enter the command using the IISCNFG tool. This is the same tool we used in our first demo to deploy the configuration settings. The command prompt displays the results of the enable audit command. We have enabled auditing on the root metabase, on server-wide logging, on filters for the default website, the entire W3 SVC service, and the website we created in the first demo. We also enabled auditing for metabase entries for application pools and the info root. We also want to use HTTP compression on static files. Why do we want to compress static files? Because after the page receives its first request, IIS stores the compressed version to a location of your choice. The only processing that occurs is on the first request, and after that, IIS serves this compressed file. This compressed version can now be cached in the IIS cache, which is stored in the kernel. This reduces the footprint of the file significantly. There is a problem, however, when you enable compression for static files. We need to go to the admin scripts directory to get at adsutil so that we can see what the problem is. We run this command to see all of the IIS compression settings. The list of extensions that static compression supports is limited to HTM, HTML, and TXT. Dynamic compression also has a very limited number of supported extensions. Be careful with dynamic compression. Why? Because IIS does not let us store compressed dynamic files to disk, so every time you run a dynamic file using compression, CPU usage will go up. This isn't a problem for static files, because IIS only compiles the file the first time a user requests it and then stores it to disk. Let's expand this list of supported extensions to include XML, VBS, and JS files. These are static files, so we can take advantage of static compression for them as well. We can use adsutil to do that for us. We'll use the set command and define W3 SVC, filters, compression, gzip. Now after gzip, we'll add the hc file extensions. You need to be sure to include the extensions for which IIS already supports compression. If you don't, they would be removed from the list, and we don't want that. If we rerun the command we performed just a bit ago, we get the extended list of file extensions that we can now statically compress. Sometimes during the course of a day, you don't want your application pool to recycle because of a configuration change that you have made. You can turn off recycling for configuration changes. Let's test the application pool recycling first. First, we're going to open a page in our website to make sure we have a worker process running. Then we switch to the command prompt and run the IIS app command, and it returns our PID. We need to make a note of that value. Now we're going to make some changes to our Metabase configuration so that we'll prompt an application pool recycle. This is a good opportunity to see the effects of Metabase auditing. So let's quickly look in the event viewer, since we just edited the Metabase. The event properties tell us the event category was object access, and it tells us that the Contoso administrator was the person who made this change. It also tells us the old value and the new value for the CPU monitoring Metabase setting. Then we'll close the event viewer. Now, let's refresh our web page again to make sure we have a new worker process. Then we return to the command prompt and run the IIS app command again, and lo and behold, our PID has changed. You can turn off this feature so that you're not recycling your application pool every time you make a change. This can be handy if you're making a number of changes over the course of a day. To do that, we need to use ADSUtil again. So at the command prompt, enter the set command and specify W3SVC, app pools, demo site. Then we specify the Metabase property, disallow rotation on config change, and set it to 1. So when we go into IIS Manager and change some configuration settings, the application pool will not automatically recycle. The next time the application pool will recycle will be at its next scheduled time, which by default is 1,740 minutes, or 29 hours. Recycling in the middle of the day, particularly a number of times, can cause performance to degrade, and if you're working on your servers for the day, you should really consider turning this to off. Let's test this by browsing to the default page of the demo site again. Now when we check the PID of the application pool, we find that it hasn't changed. We're also going to show you how to enable extended logging properties for your websites. To do this, we go into the properties for our demo site by using the IIS Manager. On the General tab, there is the schedule for IIS logging, as well as the default location where IIS stores the log files. What we're looking for, though, is on the Advanced tab. On this tab, we have the possible properties of incoming requests and outgoing responses that IIS can log. We're going to enable a few here that are of particular interest for us as web server administrators. We'll enable the time taken and the referrer logging options. The first of these two allows you to know how long it takes IIS to respond to an incoming request. If this value grows too large, your server may be encountering performance issues. The second records the URL of any website that links to this website. This is a good way to find broken links to your site on the internet and contact the administrators responsible for those links. It's also a good way to track broken links from sites for which you are responsible. The other logging feature that we want to enable is centralized W3C logging. When you enable this, all of the websites on your server write their logs to a single W3C file. When you enable this, IIS only requires one handle to the current log file. By default, each IIS website has its own log file, and each one requires an open handle to its specific log file. Enabling centralized W3C logging allows you much greater scalability because you have one open handle rather than hundreds or thousands, depending on how many websites you host. Let's go to our agenda to introduce troubleshooting our production web servers. We need to discuss the inevitable tasks you face when something goes wrong in your applications or servers. You need to know what tools to use to debug process crashes and other situations that will arise on your web servers. Before we get started with the main presentation, let's briefly discuss the evolution of IIS. Your first step is to determine where the problem is actually occurring. Is the problem originating from IIS itself, or is it one of the applications that you have deployed to IIS? These types of issues are amplified when you have deployed your applications to a web farm. There are two simple techniques that you can apply. The first is to concentrate the load on the server that you think is having problems to find out if that will help you uncover what is going wrong. The second is to take the suspect server out of the web farm and run tests on it in isolation. There are several different tools that you can use to help you troubleshoot your servers. As we mentioned before, you can use Windows Server Tracing and all of the IIS Diagnostics Toolkit. This includes Authorization Diagnostics Tools, IIS Request Viewer, and Log Parser 2.2. Of particular importance can be the Debug Diagnostics Tool, which is part of the Diagnostics Toolkit. It's helpful to use because it has a user interface, but it also has an analysis engine that can give you answers in short order. Debug Diagnostics lets you apply parameters to the server process through rules that you define. It has built-in rules for process crashes, application hangs, and application memory leaks. You can also define custom rules and apply them to your server process as well. One thing you need to keep in mind is that while you can gather information about your production servers using Debug Diagnostics, you shouldn't perform analysis on the production servers. Debug Diagnostics takes the information from your production servers and puts it in a file. You should transfer that file to your workstation to perform analysis. Don't do that in your production servers. It could cause a performance hit for those servers. Let's discuss the typical kinds of problems you will run into when you're managing production level web servers. There are a number of types of problems that you will have to deal with while you work as a web server administrator. There is no maybe about this. You will have to work over these problems more than once. The first is web application crashes, application hangs, and memory leaks. You'll also deal with server errors. Commonly, these will cause a server to return a 500 error code. There are also authentication errors, SSL failures, and a host of others. The tools we described earlier will help you diagnose these problems. Let's step through a quick demonstration of how Debug Diagnostics works. In this demonstration, we will use the Debug Diagnostics tool to troubleshoot an ASP page that causes the server to hang. Now, let's look into process hangs by using an ASP page to cause a hang. First, we create another rule in the Debug Diagnostics tool. This time, we select the IIS hang rule, and then we enter a URL to monitor for process hangs. We type the URL of the page that we are suspicious of in our application. In this case, it is an ASP file named hang.asp. We can also use this dialog box to set the ping interval, the number of seconds between requests to the URL we just specified, and the timeout for our rule, the amount of time the rule will run. Let's change these to 8 and 30, just to speed things up a bit. Remember that you can set these values to whatever makes sense for your debugging requirements. We then choose our dump target. We select web application pool for our type, and then the default app pool, and click OK. Debug Diagnostics is now set up to monitor all requests coming to applications hosted by the demo site application pool, including any requests to our sample application. Again, we want the tool to send the dump file to the default directory, which for this rule is again in the IIS resources folder under program files. Now we're ready to generate a hang and have Debug Diagnostics analyze it for us. On our website, we click a link to an ASP file that has been coded to get an object stored on another server. The server is unavailable and we run into a process hang. We click the link and see an unresponsive web page. When we switch to the tool and click the Rules tab, we initially don't see any changes. Remember, we changed our timeout value to 30 seconds, so we need to give this just a bit before anything shows up in the directory in which our tool stores the dump files. Now that we have our dump file, we find that the user dump column now displays 1 instead of 0. We also want to note the folder in which the tool puts the user dump files for analysis and debugging. Now that we have experienced the hang in Internet Explorer, and we know that Debug Diagnostics has gathered up the information about the hang, we have to perform a few more steps to generate a report. On the Advanced Analysis tab, we need to add the dump file to analyze, so we click Add Data Files and then choose the dump associated with the W3WP worker process. Then we choose the script we want to run and the dump file that we just added and start the analysis. This will take a bit of time while Debug Diagnostics uses all of the instructions we provided for it, but the tool is determining what we have instructed it to do and what appropriate information to display from the dump file. While that works, why don't we switch to a pre-compiled report and go over the information we find there? In the analysis summary section, we encounter two warnings. The first tells us that the blocked threads on our server are waiting for data from a remote server. It also tells us that all ASP threads are currently blocked, as are almost 57% of all threads in general. This is likely our problem, and the tool suggests that we check the availability of the remote server as well as the status of the network. The second warning informs us that 35 client connections have each been executing a request for more than 90 seconds. As you probably know, this is a common result when an ASP thread blocks the processing of other threads. In this example, we analysed the W3WP process that serves the default application pool. If you remember, we specified the iisanalysis.asp file as our analysis script. Debug Diagnostics will always provide us with two pieces of information in a hang scenario. The first is a list of the top 5 threads ordered by the amount of CPU time they use. The tool breaks the time consumption into the amount of time in user mode and the amount of time in kernel mode. This is important information for you to analyse when your hang causes high CPU usage. Debug Diagnostics will also include a thread report for all processes for which we specify hang analysis. This shows us all of the threads in the process. It includes the following information for each thread: the entry point, the create time, the amount of time spent in user mode, the amount of time spent in kernel mode, and a comment that explains the kind of work the thread does. In this example, there are 45 threads, so we won't cover each one. There are also some interesting reports that Debug Diagnostics will generate based on the behaviour of the process that we tell it to analyse. If the process loads inetinfo.exe or w3wp.exe, Debug Diagnostics will generate an HTTP report. If the process loads the asp.dll, Debug Diagnostics will generate an ASP report. Let's look first at the HTTP report. The HTTP report contains the worker thread count, the number of available worker threads, and the number of active client connections. It also includes a list of client connection information for each currently executing HTTP request. Each entry contains information about the connection itself, the host header, whether the request used GET or POST, the HTTP version used by the request, the time alive for the request, and a few more pieces of information. The time alive value can be important if you have difficulty determining which request caused the original hang. Look through the list and find which connection has the largest time alive value. This may determine which request first caused the hang to occur. Now let's look at the ASP report. The ASP report looks somewhat like the HTTP report, but shows us in detail which requests are going into the ASP ISAPI extension. The report begins with the number of active ASP requests, the number of cached ASP templates on the server, the cache size, the number of applications on the server, and the version of ASP that is installed on IIS. Next, we have the ASP application section of the report. This is information about the ASP application associated with the process dump about which we generated the report. It includes the application's metabase key, the physical and virtual paths to the application, session and request counts, the session timeout, and a number of other application-specific information. Some of this information can help you diagnose a problem, but mostly it just lets you know that there is a backlog of ASP requests, and we already knew that. The meat of this report comes next, in the current ASP request section. This is a list of all the current ASP requests in process when Debug Diagnostics generated the dump file. It tells us some of the same information we found in the application report, but also includes a couple of important bits that we did not find earlier. The first is the thread number associated with the specific request, and the second is the amount of time the request has been active, or the request's alive for value. Just as in the HTTP report, this last value can help you narrow down the number of threads that may have been the original cause of the hang. This demonstration should give you a sense for how you can use Debug Diagnostics to troubleshoot your web applications. It offers many more analysis tools, including rules for crashes and memory leaks. Next, we'll talk about how you can plan for disasters on your web applications, sites, and servers. The important thing about planning for disasters is that you prepare for them. You not only need to back up your content and systems, but you need to have a recovery procedure that you have practiced. We will give you a few pointers on these issues right now. We'll begin by discussing the reasons that many of us do not prepare for disasters. It is the job of all web server administrators to be prepared for any possible disaster that might happen to their servers, and to get the sites and applications on those servers running again in the shortest possible time. Frequently, however, IT pros don't plan for disasters as well as they could. They're caught in handling the small problems repeatedly and not setting aside the time to develop a full disaster recovery plan. Frequently, IT pros rely on disk backup to be the entire disaster recovery strategy, and this doesn't always work. It can, but you, as a web administrator, need to make sure that you've performed a full backup and that all configurations and installations are backed up the way they need to be on the servers when restoration is required. Additionally, system state backups include the metabase, so that can give you a false sense of security as well. Having a disk backup without testing whether your backup works on a completely different hardware setup can be like flying blind, so you need to test those types of scenarios. Also, you need to practice restoring your backups and develop techniques that allow you to get your websites and applications running again in a hurry. One strategy that we'll demonstrate is building an IIS server offline and having it wait in the wings until that time that you need it to restore your servers from a disaster. We'll show you how you can quickly and easily have it serving pages while you diagnose the problems on your other servers. Now that we've discussed how Microsoft designed IIS 6 for security, let's talk about its default settings when you install it. Backing up IIS 6 is pretty straightforward. You simply need to make sure you save all the things that you'll need to restore. First of all, if your sites or applications use Secure Sockets Layer, you need to back up those certificates. You can use the IIS Cert Deploy tool to do that. Next, you should back up the IIS 6 metabase using a tool called IIS Back. It allows you to capture the metabase settings in the right format so that you can plug the metabase into the IIS servers and run it with exactly what you had before the disaster occurred. Finally, and this seems obvious, but you need to make sure that you back up all the content that you have deployed to your servers. Now, it isn't enough to simply back up these things. You need to back them up repeatedly because you don't want the backup to go stale. Consider setting a backup schedule for your servers so that you know you have the most recent content and SSL certificates backed up. Theoretically, your metabase settings won't change, but if you run a security update on all of your servers, there is the possibility that the security update caused changes to the metabase as well. At the very least, make sure you renew your backup every time you install anything on the production servers, but consider creating a regular backup schedule. Additionally, you should make sure that you practice restoring the backup as well. I can't repeat this enough. It's better to practice now and iron out any kinks in your backup procedures than to encounter glitches while you're actually performing your recovery steps. This will save you a lot of trouble in the long run. With that, let's take a look at a demo that shows you how to automate your backup procedures using a script. In this demonstration, we will show you how to use scripts to automate backing up your IIS metabase settings, content, and SSL certificates. Back up a website to a central store. Let's review the batch file we'll use to back up IIS. We remarked out the first command in the file, but it shows our command to connect to a file server, the central location to back up our files. We don't have a file server available for this session, but this illustrates how you can use the netuse command to establish a connection to the file server that hosts the backup for your website. We assign that to the network drive S of our current computer. After the pause, we would capture our certificate associated with our site. Because we don't have a certificate, this is going to generate an error when we run our batch file. We'll call that out when it happens. We have defined the W3SVC service and the site identifier for our demo site. The third step is calling the IIS backup utility to create the metadata backup files and copying them to the central directory on our local drive, C:\webbackups, from which we are going to copy our backup files to our secure location. We use a backup name and password for these files. My meta backup is the backup name, and backup pass is the password. We'll need to remember those when we restore the backups after our disaster. We then use xcopy to copy the metabase backups from the meta backup directory to the config directory, from which we're going to upload to our central storage location. The fourth step is to copy the content, metadata, and SSL certificates to our central store location. On a network share, this would be the drive S we mentioned earlier. Instead, we'll copy these files to another location on our C drive, C:\backup store. The last step would be to close the network share we established at the beginning, but we've commented that out as well. When you copy backups to a network share, be sure to close the path to the share. It is a good habit, and not doing so can tie up resources on your web server and the file server. Let's run the batch file and find out if everything works. First, there are the remarks about creating the network share. And after we press enter for the second time, the IIS cert deploy tool attempts to export a certificate for our site. But as we aren't using one, this generates an error. Next, we use the IIS backup utility to create metabase backup files for IIS, and we copy them to our local location where we're going to copy everything from. Now we've copied all of our content and configuration to our local file server. Our cleanup step is next, and in it we close the connection to the remote file server. Let's open Windows Explorer and see whether our files are where they should be. The backup store directory is here, which did not exist before. The config folder contains the backup files that we created with IIS-Back. The content folder contains a directory full of our demo site content. The SSL folder contains a sample file with a .sir extension that we created before today's session. If we hadn't done that, the xcopy would not have created the SSL folder. Creating a batch file similar to this can make backing up your certificates, metabase, and content very easy. Investing some time in putting together a file like this that you can run on every server in your enterprise can really make you ready for recovering your sites and applications faster. Let's move on to talk about common steps you need to take to restore your IIS setup, sites and applications today. Keep in mind during backup that using a central storage location makes it much easier to restore from the backup when you need to. When you do this, you don't need any connections to multiple locations across your network. This allows your turnkey restoration to work much more smoothly. If for some reason you can't use a central store, use a tape backup to restore to another single location, then recover from that location. If you do this, be sure to make sure your scripts are updated with the correct path to the backed up data. Finally, you should also make sure that your restore scripts are hosted on each production server. This makes the recover process significantly easier. Now that we've discussed how Microsoft designed IIS 6 for security, let's talk about its default settings when you install it. In this demonstration, we'll show you how to use scripting to readily restore your content, IIS settings, and any SSL certificates you have to your servers. Let's review our batch file to see what steps it performs. The first part of the file is remarked out, but this is our netuse command to connect to a file server on the drive S. File server web backups is our central location where our backup files are located. Again, we're not using a remote server for today's session. Instead, we'll use the directory to which we backed up our files in the previous demonstration. After the pause, we copy our metabase backup files from the C:\backupstore config directory to the metabackup directory. After that, we use IIS-Back to restore the settings. Here is where we use the name and password of the backup that we called out in the last demonstration, MyMetaBackup and BackupPass. For the next step, we simply xcopy all of the content from backup store content directory to the physical root directory for the websites our server hosts, C:\websites. We have coded this so you can copy all websites you host on a single server to the base location for all your sites on your hard drive. The last two steps we've commented out. The first has to do with copying the SSL certificate back to the local disk, then deploying it with IIS cert deploy. Commonly you want to do this, but you'll remember that we didn't have a certificate from our backup demo, so we won't run this. Finally, the last commented out section would close the network connection to the remote server, netuse S:\delete. Now we'll run our batch file and find out how restoring after a disaster can work. We move past our network share connection command. Then we restore our metabase backup files. This can take just a second for the system to respond. There, The batch file has restored our Metabase settings. The content files are copied to their physical root directory. We'll fast track through the SSL restore step and the cleanup step. We hope this gives you a solid understanding of the tools you can use to back up and restore your websites and applications on IIS. Your sites are no doubt more complex than these, but this should provide you a good introduction to the tasks required to perform these steps successfully. Now let's quickly review what we've gone over today. The first thing you should take away from our session today is the importance of using the right tools to deploy IIS configuration, content, and dependencies. Make sure you understand which tools to use and when. You should also configure your applications correctly when you deploy them. This is so your environments are set up correctly to begin with and you don't run into problems in your production servers related to configuration. Additionally, this helps you make sure that the configuration is consistent across a multi-server environment, like a web farm. You should also use log data, either with tracing or a tool like LogParser, to learn how your sites and applications work. This can allow you to turn off IIS features that you don't need. You should also always be prepared for failures and take immediate action when they occur. Sometimes, a small failure that you let go for too long a time can cause a system-wide failure, so handle these issues as they arise. Finally, create a rollback strategy. Know where you have backed up your content, Metabase information, and any certificates your sites use. Work out whether you're going to recover from a tape backup or from a central store. All of these decisions are important, but regardless of where or how you choose to back up your IIS sites and settings, you need to practice recovering them so that you don't waste time when you need to get those servers running again. To get more information on the products and technologies that we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help you. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/technet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/technet/add-27 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. There are a couple of good books from Microsoft Press that might help you. The first is the Microsoft IIS 6 Administrator's Pocket Consultant. And the second is the Microsoft Internet Information Services 6 Resource Kit. There are also a number of good books from other publishers. The Microsoft LogParser Toolkit, IIS 6 The Complete Reference, the Microsoft IIS 6 Delta Guide, and IIS 6 Administration each contain information on how to use some of the tools we discussed today, so please use them to your advantage. You can buy these books online or at any bookstore with a comprehensive section dedicated to internet technologies. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, which includes e-learning, MS Pressbooks, workshops, clinics, and Microsoft Skills Assessment. MOC is offered in instructor-led environments. It offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals, support, and implement solutions using Microsoft products and technologies. The courses that best support this session are course number 2576, Implementing and Administering Microsoft Internet Information Services 6, and course number 2694, Updating Web Server Skills to Internet Information Services 6, both of which are available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills for implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Press books, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including security and patch management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals, and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional. You can choose to go and become a fully certified system administrator or system engineer, or a desktop specialist. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Ian Brackenbury, TechNet Subscriptions Product Manager, to cover these changes in more detail.
TechNet Plus Subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. A subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed news groups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complimentary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The newsgroup page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.